So first of all, I would like to thank the organizer for providing us this beautiful opportunity. What I'm going to talk to you about is a proposal which we put forward a few years ago as a solution, a tentative solution to the sign problem. So Philippe, on Wednesday, told us a beautiful introduction to the problem. So you know already what it is about. We would like to sample an integral, a generalized integral, that put his things plain. The real thing we would be interested in are functional integral, lattice regularized. The problem is that the action is complex. So what is your standard approach? What would be your standard approach, which means relying on Monte Carlo simulation, is going to fail because you do not have a proper measure to sample, probability measure to sample. That is our problem. How it came about? Well, simply one of us noticed it. A couple of papers by Witten. In the meantime, they became quite famous, not only in this context, having to do with Morse theory, Lefschetz-Picard theory. And those interests were actually stemming from another source, which means trying to provide a proper regularization for certain field theory, which apparently do not present the same level of being well defined as other. In the end, roughly speaking, the same problem. But we were interested in the problem from the point of view of quote unquote complex probability, which you can't, of course, deal with, and which is a contradiction in terms, of course. So I will try to explain things, hopefully, in a simple way, and hopefully also trying to make contact with what also other speakers have already told you. This is the tricky point. Maybe you don't remember, but one of the things which is on my personal wish list at this workshop is just trying to better understand the relation in between resurgence and Lefschetz-Thimbol. Okay, but just to start from something which we have already seen, suppose you want to compute this simple one-dimensional integral. This has already been written down by Gerhard, and also Ricardo at some point was looking at this. Okay, the idea is you want to compute it, and at some point we will make the point that we want also to sample it in a Monte Carlo. This is something which could be regarded like a Z. Let B. Well, let's put this way. And so what we are saying is simply that this S is this simple sum. Okay? Let's put these things really plain. So I take lambda real and positive. And so I am ensured this is going to converge. But the tricky point is that I want to take mu is a complex number, which means that this quote-unquote S is a complex function. So first of all, we put us on a safe side, so we know the integral actually exists. Well, as usual, going to the complex plane is going to provide us with a better understanding. So why does it exist? Well, an integral like this, with this choice, actually exists on the real axis, but it exists on a contour which goes to infinity, provided you stay on given regions, which means if your z variable in this z plane goes to infinity in one of these regions, any contour integral connecting regions in this area is going to exist. And this is simply one example. We connect these two. Of course, this is something which we could compute. This is also something which we could compute. And also this one, also this one. And then one immediately realized that there is something underlying this picture. Well, this is an onomorphic function. So for example, if this is C1, C2, C3, C4, then I know that if I take as a contour the sum of the four and I integrate on such a contour, this is going to be zero by Cauchy theorem. Another way of looking at this story is that you can provide a basis for this path and any other contour on which the integral exists can be written down as a sum of the contour in your basis. Okay? This is something which we will have for a while, not really in front of our proceeding, but we will go back to this. So if you don't complain, I will leave this as it is, and then I will go back to this important point. I'm allowing mu to be complex. Now I picked up this, so I picked up a legitimate minus infinity to infinity on the real axis contour of integration. This is going to exist, no problem. But if I am so stupid that I want to compute this by Monte Carlo, this is going to fail because this is not a good measure. So the idea was the one which Philippe was pointing out on Wednesday, which means we compute this integral on a different contour, which means we change variable, and by changing variable, we end up integrating on a different contour. Of course, we know already that we need a contour that, in terms of the picture, makes sense, which means it's going to return exactly the result we are interested in. So what is the idea? We look for a contour on which we do not have this problem of a complex S to exponentiate. Okay? So let's pick up something by fiat at the very beginning, and this is my observation. I want to take a contour which is parametrized by a real variable t. We can think of that t as a time, and actually this zt is x of t plus I y of t, and this is supposed to be the solution of this. So, time derivative of x is minus partial derivative of the real part of this action. Remember, we are calling this s, and just because of this choice, this s is actually sr plus I si. Okay? Why do I want to pick up that particular contour? Because again, we are facing an holomorphic S, and then as a consequence, the time derivative, as a consequence of Cauchy-Riemann, the time derivative of the imaginary part of the action on this contour is, the time derivative is zero, which means SI
is constant. Very good, because then
we get rid of this problem. Okay? There is a constant phase. You can imagine from the very beginning where we are ended up. We will land on something which we already know, which is computation of integral by.
In this case, you actually even know that SI, this constant bit equals zero, because the answer is real.
In that. No, but.
Even this complex unit is real.
Yeah, sure. But what you are interested in is what is going to happen.
No, but if it would be a psi constant would be non-zero, then it would be overall phase. And
yeah, but that is a constant one. That's the problem.
No, right, but the, you know the answer contains knowing.
Yeah. But the main point is that whatever it is, it is in front as a constant phase. That is the main message. Okay, that's why I say I got rid of that. I can factor that out of the integral, and that is no more plugging my idea of computing by Monte Carlo. Okay? So you know one other thing, again by Cauchy-Riemann, that the time derivative of the real part is I'm taking with the minus, so it's the other way around. So this is decreasing. Okay? So, this is good on one side, can be bad on the other side. Why? Because we have not yet provided initial condition for this. So, in principle, I'm saying pick a point randomly on the z-plane and look for the solution going through that point, which is in general a very bad idea. Why? Because on one side you will be fine, okay? We have chosen this sign. We could think of the other one, if it is more natural. In that case, that is plus plus, and it is greater than zero. Which means that as t grows, as increases, well, we are done. Because then, on that side, we are ensured we meet the convergence requirement for the integral. But what about the other one? On the other one, if one is fine, the other one is going to be bad. There is one other possibility, which is you do not go to infinity. You stop to a point, which is a critical point of this guy, which means if you go through a critical point, where the derivative of s is zero, then you are getting there in principle at infinite time, but what we are actually doing by this recipe is that you are minimizing SR till at the very end you will reach the minimum at the point satisfying this condition, and that would be at t equal infinity. Okay? So we picked up something which sounds good, but which is also something which we already know. This is stationary phase integral, if you want. You pick up a stationary point, you deform your contour of integration, then that's what we usually do, we make a Taylor expansion for S. S is given by the value at the critical point, then there is no variation because we are at the critical point, and then there is a second order effect. And one usually stops over there, compute, and that is what is the standard recipes is. Now we want to do something more. We want not to take any Taylor expansion, but to retain everything. Okay? So just in order to pin down something and to gain some intuition, let me see what I was telling you from another point of view. Hopefully this will thanks. So this is the original domain of integration. This is the critical point I'm picking up. I have not already told you, okay? This is the one which I pick, which is zero, okay? Of course, oh no, I know there will be other two. This is a quartic S. So I'm going to find also this and this. This would be what you could call the X vector, if you want, okay? Now, this, and this are exactly the path I was referring to, okay? In particular, look at this, and you will be happy. Is it easy to see that it connects just the two regions on which our original integral was going, toward which our original integral was going to infinity? Which means by Cauchy theorem, okay, we are happy. Integrating this way.
What is the range of argument of mu? For that picture.
For that picture, I took, can tell you precisely.
It changes.
Yeah, sure. That's what we are going to see. This picture is actually a movie, it's not a picture. Okay. Of course, it was a very, very good point. For a given, let's say, for a given choice of mu, which corresponds to real part of mu positive, some part, imaginary part positive, fixed, then what we are going to do is to change the real part of mu, and we will see that everything is going to change. That is well expected. Why? Because, okay, this guy will remain here, but these are these. The other two critical points are going to move in the complex plane, okay? But let's, for a moment, remain on this situation, okay? We are happy because, by inspection, if you want, we can see that... terrible mess, that's what we can see.
Instead of picture,
there is something interfering. Okay, it's already started. Well enough. This is what I was telling you. These guys are moving now, okay? Critical points are different. We end up at some point, the imaginary part of this has been kept fixed in this movie, but the real part changed, and actually it changed in sign.
But look, the point mu equals zero, it's still an analytic point. You can expand from mu, right? I mean,
yeah.
There's no non-analyticity in mu. I mean, well, you know, the picture is changing, the point mu equals zero looks like that expands the mu.
Well, the main point going through zero for the real part with my choice will be something important in any case.
But it is like a Stokes phenomena.
It is exactly a Stokes phenomena.
So it's not discontinuity in mu. Right?
Just allow me some time and I will be back to you on this Stokes point, okay? Stokes line, okay? What is the idea? The idea is that having changed the value of the parameter, this guy has remained over there. Those guy moved, but look at what we are going to call the thimble. So thimbles are steepest descent path attached to a critical point. Okay? That is our first starting definition that we will elaborate a little bit more. Okay? But look at this figure. It's pretty obvious that now I cannot integrate on this and hope to reconstruct my original integral. Why? Because now I'm connecting to different regions. But then the other thimbles come and are going to help me, because if I go this way, this way, and this way, I can reconstruct once again, because of the basis homology point of view I was pointing out at the very beginning, my original integral. Okay? So it appears like there was one lucky case in which one single critical point was providing a good domain of integration to reconstruct my integral. That's at some point the path attached to that critical point fails, but The other two provide the contribution we are missing. This is the general picture. So we will see, we will tell in a little bit more precise form, that thimbles are always a basis of the just the kind of basis I was pointing out at the very beginning. So any integral can be reconstructed by summing over contribution on thimbles. We have the general picture, in a sense, because we can see that it is not said that every single critical point provides a contribution. But if you rely on all, there are cases in which you have to sum integrals on all the path, and then you are happy. Any other integral you can compute. Another point is that there are not only blue lines, there are red lines as well. So let's be a little bit more precise. We will regard as thimbles our path will be like this. We have our function S. We look in the complex plane, that was clear from the very beginning. We were looking for solution path of integration path in the complexified space. X is going to be Z X plus I Y. Okay? We take our S, we look for critical points. To each critical point, we attach a thimble, which is the union of all the steepest descent, the solution of the steepest descent equation, which I wrote down, getting to the critical point at infinite time. In this case, of course, there is only one solution. Why? Because we will see it a little bit better. Dimension matters, which means we started integrating on a manifold of real dimension 1, then we extend to the complex plane, real dimension is 2 over there, but we only take a path within that. That is something which is exactly the same real dimension of my original integral. That is going to happen always. This is a result provided by the theory. So the thimble attached to any given critical point is exactly the same real dimension of the original manifold on which I started considering my integral. And that is the magic, if you want. Okay? There is always, in the complexified environment, a manifold with the same real dimension, satisfying this condition of having constant imaginary part. No more a problem, because I take it out of the integral. And second, we are ensured that we converge, because following the ascent, if you want, as R is going to grow, and so the integral exists. Okay? So what are these other red lines? These other red lines are what are called the unstable thimbles. In this case, what does it mean? This is exactly a solution, in our simple case, of the equations I wrote down before, but this time we do not reach the critical point, the original, as t goes to infinity, but the critical point is the solution of my flow at t equal minus infinity. Which means that going the other way around, here you're going to get into trouble if you want to try to compute the integral. This is a path on which you don't want to compute your integral. It does not exist. Okay? If you want to have things really simple, change this sign and everything sweeps. Okay? Also, in this case, there is a base. Not only those are independent, and blah, blah, blah. Okay? But the main point is, at each critical point, you attach the stable thimbol, the blue lines, which is the one you are interested in, and the unstable one. Why are they telling you something? Well, basically because this is a recipe at this point, we could elaborate, it would not take that much time, but look at what's going on. Look at these guys. Hop, at this point, as you can see, the unstable thimbles attached to this and this intersects the original domain of integration. That's your recipe. Does a thimble contribute? The answer is yes, provided the dual thimble, the unstable one, attached to the same critical point, intersects the original domain of integration. That's the recipe, and it would not take that much to justify that. Basically, it has to do with the fact that you can define a bilinear form providing you with a with a Z number given two thimbles. Okay? So the idea is to study the intersection of thimbles, of stable and unstable. They cannot intersect except when they are attached to the same critical point. And in that case, they intersect only once at the critical point themselves. Let me point out something which could be tricky from the point of view of numerics, which is around here, one should be careful and try not to mess up components along this and components along this while you are integrating numerically and paving your way into the thimble. If you pick up some component, if you end up following this path, then you are going not to recover any meaningful result. Okay? But again, the message is thimbles are a basis, which means any integral can be written as a sum of integral. Each of one is computed on one of these thimbles, and each thimble is attached to a critical point. Not all of them contribute to a given integral. What is the recipe? The recipe is consider your original domain of integration and consider the intersection of the unstable thimble attached to critical point. If the unstable thimble attached to this critical point intersect, as it does here, this thimble actually contributes.
Sorry, so this means that if I didn't know the original integration cycle, I cannot do
it. Yeah, the idea, the starting point is that you have an integral you want to compute, and then you try to elaborate how you can compute that in a different way. That is our point of view. So we know what we want to compute. It is well defined, but this was well defined since the very beginning. But I couldn't compute it by Monte Carlo. That is my only very, very trivial problem. Okay, I can't compute by Monte Carlo. Sign problem is that my only concern with that respect. So I want to rephrase everything in terms of computing other integrals, which are good to compute because the imaginary part of action is constant, so they are not in the business of the integral. And everything is controlled by SR. This is not really the case, as we will see. There is actually a phase in, and we will be back to that quite early. But all in all, this provides basically the basic pictures. And by the way, this is exactly the kind of plot which also Meetup was drawing on the blackboard yesterday. So that's the point at which we make contact with also yesterday discussion. Okay. Now we are not going to need that any longer. So, if I want, I can erase all this. Then, I have to hurry up because, as usual, so let me be a little more general. Being a little bit more general means that we will always face something like this. Our problem will always be the complex nature of this S, And so our idea is recipe. Phi is promoted to a complex variable. We complexify degrees of freedom. And then we look for the integration contour, the integration domain. Suppose you started with an original integration domain. What is the new original domain? The new original domain is this thimble. Okay, let me put it this way in order not to mess up notation too much. This is attached to a given critical point, and it is defined as the union of all the steepest descent path ending up at time equal infinity onto that critical point. Given that, our recipe is actually contained in this formula. This is the observable I want to compute.
Phi is complex, but it doesn't mean that you increase the case of
freedom. No, not at all. That's the point. Yeah. Not at all. That's the point. That's the magic. Yeah. You go into the complex plane, but your change of variable is provided by what? By the solution to a differential equation. That solution is singling out for you a manifold which has exactly the same real dimension of the original one. That's the main point.
Suppose your original integration interval, integration domain, is an interval on the real axis.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you map that to some segment of the?
Well, I mean, for example, what Mithat was doing. Most of those cases are cases in which basically it's just like in Fourier analysis. I mean, that one is going to be thought as part of something replicating. Those are the usual things you are interested in. I don't know whether Mithat wants to comment on that.
So, because an interval, it's a finite interval. Mm-hmm. But in my example, there were two saddles, one at the origin, one at pi over 2. But the cycles attached to those saddles were living in the whole complex domain. Mm-hmm. But the linear, but exactly when argument of my coupling was zero, there were two cycles, and all these infinite parts cancel each other essentially, you know, these infinite tails. So
this is the case, for example, for things which have already been worked out as a simple example in this framework.
So you're going to higher dimension right now, right?
Sorry?
Is there a higher dimensional?
Yeah.
So is it you create a Hamiltonian system in the same way?
Exactly. Basically, that's
and
what
just
I'm doing.
Integrate along the trajectory.
Yeah. What he was correctly pointing out is that I could regard as imaginary part of the action as the Hamiltonian being preserved on a Hamiltonian flux, which is defined by those equations. Okay. That's the other way of looking at that. Thank you for the observation. Okay. So going back to the. So I have to translate both integral, the one at numerator, the one involving the O, and the one at the denominator involving the Z. So the Z itself has to be reconstructed as a sum. So let's start from Z. I have to sum over all critical points in principle, a coefficient. Who is this guy? It's just the intersection number I was pointing out before. Okay, so this can be zero. And then there is a constant phase there is a different one for each critical point and then I have integral over thimble in some I'm integrating over some choice of variables in which I pick up immediately a notation in which it is clear that the real dimension is n, and then I have e to the minus as r, but I've got something else, which is what we term the residual phase. What is this? Well, it is plain simple. These are not if you want, the dz you would pick up naturally in the replicas of the z plane. But if you want, the real volume form, which has to do with the tangent space at the thimble and any given points, has a relative orientation with respect to the canonical integration form of the environment in which you are living now. Okay, it is basically a change of variable. Okay, which lets you with an integral. Why? Because it's dictated by something unitary. Okay. At the numerator is exactly the same, with only your O making its appearance, of course.
I did not understand residual space.
We will get back to that later. Okay. We have to change variable of integration. We will see in a concrete example, which is our standard parametrization of the thimble. Okay, adding and lighting the fact that there is a residual phase, one could say, okay, you are back to the very beginning. Why? Because you have a phase within your integral. Actually, a sign problem is not the per se having a phase.
What's the difference between numerator and denominator?
With the O's
and O's? Oh, yeah, sorry. Of course, there is the O here. Okay, this one. All the point with the sign problem, if you want, goes back to what Philippe was pointing out at the very end. So, in principle, any phase could be accounted for via reweighting. Okay? Suppose, for example, we are in the lucky case in which n sigma is 1 for one particular critical point and it is 0 for all the others. If you want, with the first choice of mu in our trivial example, that was the case. Okay, so suppose one single critical point did contribute. Okay, in that case, there is no sum, there is no NS, this is only one thing. Okay, I could say underlying that there is, if you want, a partition function which is defined this way. Okay. Given this, I could compute something which I could, as a notation, define this way. Okay. I call it with a sigma because it is a contribution attached to that critical point. As you can see, there is no residual phase here, and this is a pretty much sensible partition function for a theory. I could perform Monte Carlo and all that. This is not what you have here, but the original O expectation value you are interested in can now be rewritten this way. This is exactly the same reweighting Philip was telling us about on Wednesday. Okay? So, what is the intuition behind this? Why should I be happy with computing such a reweighting while I was not happy in reweighting the original imaginary part of the action? The point is that what you really call a sign problem is the one in which you have wide fluctuation, which is crazy with respect to the region of your integration domain in which this is important. Okay? So there is no connection whatsoever of the sign and of this contribution. And that is going to art. Okay? This phase is something which is mutually changing. So it is not a priori, as a naive expectation, be expected to be such a problem. This is something for which we do not have a real result, okay? The only thing which we can say is that this is our expectation. This is something which is smooth and is not going to be so difficult to compute. A posteriori, what we can say is that for any single or less simple or less simple, well, most of them are simple, example for which these procedures have been worked out, reweighting with respect to the critical phase is not a problem. Okay.
What I don't understand is where is the summation over sigma?
Oh, in this case, I was saying only one sigma. Let me call it sigma. This is the case in which only this one contributes. Yeah, I was simply saying, but not properly. So this notation is easy in case, of course, I can always go back to this notation, because I can always multiply and divide by this factor. If you want, this factor has got a sigma dependence as well, okay? So my point was, suppose only one here contributes, which means that n sigma is delta sigma sigma bar, okay? In that case, the only thing I have to compute is this, is this one, okay? In which I reweighted for the critical phase. Is it any clear now? Okay.
So this looks like a very favorable case because the fluctuations in the denominator are all but gone. So you say, aha, I'm safe, I can compute. But the one thing that may happen is that the numerator now may be severely oscillating. So you start with an observable form, which when evaluated on the real axis was very smooth and say positive, and now you evaluate it along your thimble, and it's become more jumbled.
I mean, that is a pathology you couldn't always end up with. I do not think that is to do in spirit with what we are doing. Okay, you can always end up in cases like that. But your main concern was the phase at the very beginning.
You killed your sign problem in the partition function, but it's just reappeared.
It reappears as a residual phase,
no,
but again.
But you know that the observable itself is evaluated along the thing, but it's analytically continued from the real axis to the.
Yeah. Well, for any single test we did not find. Maybe you can provide an example in which that goes crazy.
But for any physical application, it would be no real phase. A phase would be zero because if it's partition function, it has no phase.
In the end, when you sum everything up, that's the point. In the end, when you sum everything up. The point is that we have to control phase at every single stage. That's the point. First of all, in Monte Carlo, and that's my problem, my original problem.
Omega is something which is changing on the
changing
path.
On the path, exactly.
However, it doesn't.
It is a smooth function over there.
It doesn't change too much.
It doesn't change too much, if you want.
Because otherwise, you'll have the same.
It's the same. This exactly the same problem Philippe was pointing out. That's my point. Okay. This is a sign problem, but not a real one.
Sorry.
It's something which you can correct by reweighting.
Because you have like some sort of a change of the variables from z. Some sort of y here?
The idea.
Compute, you know, so you get from the volume.
Exactly.
So, okay.
This is the change of variable, is the Jacobian. Yeah.
But general, we don't have to do it, I mean, if they're doing some other computations. I mean, so you're saying for the sign problem specifically, we have to do this kind of.
No, problem. The point is that every single time you face one integral, then you have to compute it in a given scheme, in a given variable. Okay, so there are two things. This was a change of variable, this promotion, at the very beginning, which was intended in enlarging, in principle, the domain, enlarging the space where you are living, but within that space, you are in any case living in an n-dimensional manifold. On top of that manifold, so you can make many different choices as for integration variable, okay? This is a different story, okay? So I'm picking up a particular choice for my variables on the thimble. Okay? We will see in a moment what we usually do. So let's go back to this, and let me stress it once again. What I'm saying is that I traded one integral for which there was a, well, yeah, one integral in principle in Monte Carlo for which there was a sign problem with many integrals. Okay, so not such a deal in principle. Okay, so this is an important point. Our original motivation had to do with Moore's theory, but to a certain extent. Okay, let point this out in this way. Are there cases in which this situation is not that unlikely? That's our point, huh? One possible point. What you could see is that, you could say, is that in a thermodynamic limit, okay, there will be a selection of contributions. So there could be cases in which one single contribution eventually is going to provide the important contribution and the latter are highly suppressed. This is not the case in many cases which we are aware of. Every single time there is some topological stuff involved, for example, you know you should go through many contributions. And also from the point of resurgence, you know that...
Yeah. In essentially, in any interesting quantum field theory, there are, in, you know, I put on my title living on a Stokes line, and we are doing an extension on the Stokes line. There are infinitely many saddles contributing. There are essentially infinitely many timbers contributing, and all of them are necessary in some way.
Well, in one way or another, let's put it, it is way, this way.
But those infinite number of symbols are crossing, like in different sectors, right? Because it just the number of sectors is large, right? Then you consider.
No, for example, even within each topological sector, if you categorize your sectors according to theta angle, even if within each topological sector, there are infinite symbols. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but there can be some qualities, but I don't know.
Exactly. Exactly, that's the point. There could be ultraviolet, for example, quantities which are not sensitive to that.
It is like counting your coordinates, right? You have a different number of coordinates anyway, right? So in principle, for each coordinate, you are looking for...
Okay, let me put it this way. This is a widely open problem, okay? I would say a widely open problem. We know that we already found lucky, quote-unquote, cases in which this holds. For example, also in these days, together with Yuya, we are going back to random matrices. The reason is that there is one formulation in which you can live with one single symbol. There is another one in which you have to take into account many others. A computation which is still a modest one, I admit, but it is something interesting, is this one, QCD in 0 plus 1 dimension. Also, in that case, you have a sign problem. In that case, the critical point you are interested in are all the Z3 elements. Okay? So there are three critical points, and you know from the very beginning that they are relevant. Why? Because they are sitting on the original domain of integration. So the intersection number is one by definition. Okay, but for example, in that case, at least you can go from 3 to 2 because of a symmetry. And then there are cases in which all these, let me jump at the very end if you want. Suppose you have a recipe to compute on a single thimble. So I will be, if you can wait just a minute. Suppose I can compute on a single thimble, then suppose I have two thimble. To be taken into account, then it is quite easy to see that the real the result I will be interested in depends essentially, given my ability to compute on thimbles, on single thimbles, suppose to contribute, my result can be cast in this way. That call is thimble 0 plus an alpha computation of thimble 1, and here is just the same story, computation on Timbal 2. So actually, there is one single parameter which I have to fix. If I compute an observable, fix it via that normalization point, then any other observable can be computed safely. Okay? This is something, if you want, closing spirit with what on the lattice we call some physical renormalization scheme. Okay? One should be modest, okay? But at least one learns that there are comments like importance of symmetry actually helping you in this decomposition. Sorry, I was making you, but maybe you were the first. Okay?
So I just wanted to make a comment about this issue you raised a few minutes ago, that if you find some effective description of a real physical system where one or two or three critical points dominate, that's effectively same as solving the system. For example, if in QCD we had that, that's perfect. We would actually have, for all practical purposes, great way to compute it. So I just want to point out that having that assumption of one or two or three or five critical points dominating is really solving the system.
Is what we are doing in certain cases. Not in all the cases, that's the point. Not in all the cases. People on the lattice have been struggling for a long time concerning what if you are frozen in a given topological sector. Okay, there are many problems having to do with
that. But I'm trying to take quantum mechanics, right? Non-linear oscillator, say, okay, oscillator is solvable, right? You can have, say, x cubed, it is, you know, two critical points, x to the fourth, more critical points. I tend to say that it's not that we know an exact solution for, we can analyze these critical points, right? But it's not that it gives you a full solution for non-linear oscillator, right?
But the converse is true. I was saying the converse. The opposite is true.
So you mean that it's finite number of, you know, the several points, but it doesn't mean that you know the full solution, right?
But if you know that one dominates or three dominate, then you know the solution to the problem to break accuracy.
Actually, that's true. Yeah. There are examples.
Say it again. You mean if you know that they dominate,
then you should analyze those saddle points because they dominate your physics.
It means that you can find asymptotics in this case, right?
Let me put it this way. That's the best you can say, which is relevant. That's the point, and that's our hope.
I'm just rephrasing the same point that I was saying a few minutes ago. I'm just rephrasing it differently.
There was maybe.
Actually, there are some very nice examples like that in which the saddles are very hierarchical and just few saddles on top dominates the scene completely. They can account for any dynamical property, phase transition, something even as dramatic as phase transition. So I think that's true. So the thing that's not so obvious is that, you know, when all of them starts to contribute similar
ways,
you know, then.
But as I was saying, this is a widely open problem. We know there are corners, if you want, in our parameter space in which that expectation is almost natural. But the main point is that in any case, it's something like computing in a given topological sector. So it is a reasonable field theory, at least. Okay. So, but there was another question.
Yeah.
And I have to hurry up.
Just quick, maybe it's naive. Why do you stick to a particular symbol based on your S? Why don't you include S plus I omega and you replace it?
Because I don't know what omega is, basically. I can compute it only on my way onto the Timbal. So the local characterization of the Timbal is hard work. That's the point. If you want, you can. There is some sort of intuition beyond that, which is you are coming from a place and you are aiming at one particular point. Okay.
But small omega, you don't know. But you're including it in your calculations. That's what I don't understand. Small omega. S plus I omega, if you include that and base your steepest descent path on that,
But the main point is that the steepest ascent defines your integration domain. And on the integration domain, the critical phase is defined. As soon as I got my integration domain, because I'm paving my way onto it by integrating, then I can compute omega. Otherwise, I can't. Okay? So there is not that much we know about Timbal, okay, in construction themselves. A local characterization of Timbal is unknown. That's the main point. Why are we happy with those? Because the thing which is really important is the real dimension. And the fact that the real dimension is n is just something which depends on the property of S itself as an holomorphic function. Okay? So the idea is that suppose you are on your Timbal, not at the Timbal, but close by, then your action will be S of ZS, which we put to zero, to make things simple, plus 1/2 Z transpose Asian of the action at that critical point, Z, plus other contribution. So there is no linear contribution because you are sitting on a critical point. And this is, if you want, where you stop when you do stationary phase. Okay? So what really happens is what's going on here. Okay? So one thing which I have not told you, but which also Mitat was using, is that the equation I wrote down can be made compact in this way. This is important, okay? And let me point out that this is also the difference with respect to complex Langevin. So in complex Langevin, one equation is the same for Z, for X. The other one has the opposite sign. And that was what Mitat was pointing out. Why are they looking for a Langevin equation like that? Okay, because they simply translate, they have this formal way of discussing Fokker-Planck, which ends up with the same formulas, but then you have to deal with those. Okay, so this is the difference. Okay, so there is a compact notation in which everything is complex. Within that notation, you have to look at the complex Asian, okay, which is given by all the second order complex derivative. But you can also rephrase that by considering the Asian for the real part of the action as a function of real and imaginary parts of your Z. Okay, which means that if I this is for S, then remember, I erased that, S is SR. Let me put it this way, okay, to be really, I hope, clear. You know Cauchy-Riemann, then you pick this one. This is the Morse function in what we are saying, okay? And this is what remains for you
but
here.
In case of Langevin, my understanding is that, you know, it was suggested by Lisi, it means that you have indeed double integration, right?
Sure. That's the point with Langevin. The different point with Langevin is this one. Yes. In this case, I want to stay on an n-dimensional integral. Yes. In the other case, the idea is that I go around in a way which is dictated by my stochastic differential equation in the entire complex plane, it is the dynamics itself which is going to single out a final asymptotic distribution which is according to the one I was at the very beginning interested in. That's the magic with Langevin. And we have to go through working out a solution for the Fokker-Planck equation. Okay? So it is a dynamical question in any case. Okay? But in that case, you wonder about, at some point, we had this very trivial expectation, which was, in cases in which Langevin works, what I expect is that, in the end, you will stay attached to Timbals in one way or another. Okay? This is something which is too naive. Okay. Still, there should be a way to make contact in between the two in a much deeper sense, which I ignore. Okay.
No, but
the more I work on this, the more I find myself.
But there it was kind of, if you like, an integral representation for your original probability, right? And I'm not sure how kind of you can justify this. It could be the case.
It is a dynamical question. That's the point. Okay, it's Fokker Planck which is ruling.
Yes.
Then there are your expectations, but then there is Fokker Planck, and there is not that much that you can say in many cases. That's the point. Okay. Okay. But in any case, if I take into account the Hessian at the critical point for SR, okay, this is something living in the space of n times n matrices. This is living in 2n times 2n. And what I'm doing, I'm collecting all the x and then all the y. That is my choice for the basis in terms of x and y. Having said this Hessian is now real part of this guy minus real part of this guy, imaginary part of this, imaginary part of this. Once again, because of Cauchy-Riemann and Schwarz. And then you are happy, because a real matrix like this, if it is non-degenerate, so if there are no zero eigenvalue, have exactly n lambda in R plus. But then you also get minus lambda as eigenvalue. So they split. If you want, these are associated to the direction which provides you with the tangent space at the critical point of the stable thimble. Okay, the other one, those with the minus sign, provide you, in terms of eigenvectors, a basis for the unstable thimble. Let's put this in yet another way. Those are fixing the rate at which either us increase, leaving on a steepest ascent, or decreases on the unstable part. Does it make sense? So you have n independent direction you can leave, along which you can leave the critical point, and those are telling you that the real dimension of your manifold is n. And this is going to be the same story at each point on the thimble. But the main point is that you don't know the tangent space at that point. The only thing you can do is you take your tangent space at the critical point, and then you evolve those vectors with an equation which is once again fixed by the flow you are following, and you pave your way all the way through the thimble by solving for both points and vectors on the tangent space. I don't have time because I'm really running out of time in this approach, but that is the main idea. And our main idea is that a way to characterize our thimble is the following. Every single z on the thimble could be thought in terms of two number. This is pretty intuitive. This is the direction you pick up at the tangent space. You leave the tangent space on a steepest ascent, if you want, path along that direction at the critical point. And then you integrate till the time, the quote-unquote evolution time t. This corresponds exactly to one. It is a one-to-one correspondence, okay? Which also means, and then I really jump and run, which also means that all our integral, all these, this was a generic, okay, choice for our variables onto the thimble. What I'm saying is that, well, there is a natural choice for my variable. That is my natural choice. Component of n, the vector, of course I fix a normalization. This is something on a sphere, on an n-dimensional sphere. I fix the norm, and so I remain with what in the n-dimensional space. On the surface, I fix the norm. I fix the norm of the sphere. On the surface, I remain with exactly n minus 1 degrees of freedom. The And the last one is provided by T. Okay? And this is a constructive way of understanding where this critical residual phase is coming from. Without any demonstration, I can tell you that on a single thimble, this integral can now be rewritten this way. On a single, sorry, take again one particular critical point. Then there is a prefactor, which is a function. Well, I can write it because it's not that long to do it. So everything by now is parametrized by N and T, okay? So if I want to reconstruct all the thimble, I have to integrate on all the possible direction. There is a net just to remember that they are fixed. So there is a given normalization. Okay, this is fixed. So effectively, I've got N minus one integration variable. Then, once I choose my direction, I have to follow my steepest ascent, and that is parametrized by T. Okay, so everything is parametrized this way. Well, I changed my integration variable on the contour, on the manifold, to get in touch with this. And this provides me with a Jacobian, the modulus of which enters here. So S effective is the original as R minus log of the modulus of that. Let me write it this way. Y e to the I omega is just the phase of this determinant. So if you want this determinant, that mu sigma, which I'm going to tell you what it is e to the I omega plus this modulus. What is this matrix? This is the matrix which I can assemble by taking all the vectors which are the solution of the associated flow equation I was mentioning before. So I sit at the critical point, I solve the problem for the basis over there, and while I'm going up, I also parallel transport, if you want, the basis, and any single point, those can be cast into a matrix whose determinant in modulus is whose determinant is your Jacobian, okay? Then the modulus of that enters this effective action. The phase is just the residual phase. Is this any clearer than
yeah,
before?
Yeah,
okay. So this is the point. It's a tricky computation, as you can see. Now I run really out of time, but let me simply point out a couple of simple ideas. They are not that simple, but okay, concerning gauge theory. So in the end, you tell me you are interested in QCD, otherwise you are cheating. Well, my answer could be, well, this is interesting stuff in any case, but okay. Amusement is not all the point. So at some point you should make contact with QCD. So what do you need? You need a new definition, quote unquote, of the thimble. What are the difference? The difference is that what does it mean to complexify a Young-Mill field? It means that this guy is also promoted this way. Okay? There is one simple way of saying that, which is go back. As you know, we are always looking at links in our approach, in our lattice approach. And then you say there is I, then possibly you are in front of this if you don't regard that as part of your definition. But in any case, sum over A of A mu A x t A. And then you can take a different approach. Either you can say these are the real components in SU3. They got complexified, and you end up in SL3C. Huh? Otherwise, you can say, OK, these double are going to double, and those are going to be real in any case. Okay, but it's just the same. The main point is you live over here. Now, it is true that when you promote your action has an extended symmetry, gauge symmetry, which is this one. But remember, you are not wandering about in SL3C. You want to stay on a given manifold within SL3C, like we were doing before.
The marble generators in this way stay.
So yeah, but it's not that easy to recognize that. I can, okay, that's yours, okay? It's not that way, okay? You don't know. But what you know is that you need an equation to define the thimble also in this way. And the equation is very, very similar to what we were writing down before.
The equation could be whether you are placing SU3 inside of SL3 in particular form or in the other form. Because when you are, because there are probably not one way how you put your original SU3 into extended.
No, that's the point. I'm not going to look for that. That would be very, very difficult. What I'm saying is that I start from a critical point. It is not true, but I will elaborate a little bit more on that immediately later. So just may allow a good starting point, which has to do with a critical point. Okay? And then the solution I'm interested in are those of this equation, time derivative of U, not surprisingly, the derivative is going to enter, is I okay? That is my new flow equation.
But number of generators is still the same as what it was, right? TA is the same.
Yeah, no? But I can't I mean, let's say my original theory was SU3
yeah.
To the what? Four, because we are in four dimension, and volume. Okay? Right. To reconstruct that picture on the thimble is very hard, virtually impossible. The main point is that as I follow this, the gauge symmetry, which really matters, is what leaves this unchanged. And since there is a complex conjugate over here, the only gauge transformation which preserve this traction, this solution, are those of SU3. So the gauge symmetry, which is really in place for the manifold, which is the important thing, is SU3. That's the point. Okay. Now I come back very, very quickly, and I'm lucky enough because that is a tricky point. In principle, it should take a long time. Is that what does it mean in a gauge theory? Come on, you know you are going to run into problem. First of all, I will try to make my choice for boundary condition in such a way to get rid of torrents. Okay. Second, I have the gauge symmetry in place. So I do not have a critical point to start with. By the way, what are thimbles? Thimbles are sewing device, okay? So this is a thimble. It's what you put on your finger when you do your job. This is the critical point. And then attached to those, there are all the steepest ascent path paving your way into the thimble. This is no more true, of course, for a gauge theory, because there is an entire gauge orbit. But there is a recipe. I can't enter the detail, but the recipe is take the entire gauge or SU3, once again, because of this, gauge orbit of your critical point, that at any point you can go up. At any point, you will have part of the direction, let's say at the critical point, part of the direction, those will be the zero eigenvalue of your action, are going to follow, to make you follow the orbit. The other part are actually ascending on the thimble. And the good point is that you could start here, The main point is that the same Gaines transformation mapping this to this is mapping this point to this point. Okay? That is the image of gauge symmetry in this context. And that is what we have to preserve. It's a terrific gauge fixing, in a sense, in a given sense.
Can you just fix the gauge?
Sorry?
You can fix the gauge in principle.
Right? Yes, but okay, if you want, this is one way of doing, but in a sense you are not interested in the same spirit in which usually in a Wilson action approach, in link approach, you are not really interested in. I think I have to stop here because I have already abused.
I have two comments, one short and one may take a minute. First one is, I was recently reading something about Lefschetz, and I learned that when he was 23 years old, he lost both of his hands. Yeah, I mean, he had an industrial accident. So
you mean he was working?
Yeah, it's an industrial accident. I don't know whatever it means. He was 23 years old.
So. Probably not living only out of mathematics.
No, probably not. He was probably doing something difficult, hard work. Mathematics is also hard work, but anyways. Actually, I want to tell you something that is not widely discussed, but it is known maybe five people or so. That gradient flow equation that you have written down, okay? There are some things about it which are interesting. Actually, Witten wrote three papers about this complexification business. One of them was Chern-Simons theory. The other is quantum mechanics in phase space. And third one is the Liouville theory. Okay. And this is sort of something that came out of the email exchange. But the reason he wrote those three.
You mean with Witten?
Yeah. This is something we discussed intensively, but we couldn't agree. It's something that we couldn't agree at the end. Okay. The reason he wrote the first two, phase space quantum mechanics and Chern-Simons. Morally speaking, they are the same. If you look to the gradient flow equations, they are elliptic equations. Mm-hmm. And in those papers, he actually
make use of that.
Everything
yeah.
works perfectly, and he demonstrates it very nicely. And Sergei also wrote a paper about Chern-Simons case. So.
But you mean it would be all Langevin?
No.
This
all
one.
Langevin. Always.
This is not Langevin.
Yeah. But he thinks that if the equations are parabolic, but it covers almost all of the quantum field theory. These techniques, I have to phrase this carefully. There is no a priori reason to expect that these techniques would work. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think he doesn't say this in these words in his paper, but there are many puzzles in his dual theory paper. Okay, for example, there are some complex singular configurations, and they are, if you read the paper, they are really very puzzled about those things. And they are not clear whether these things contribute or not to the pattern theorem. Okay? So the punchline is, his punchline is, if these gradient flow equations are elliptic, the technology in infinite dimension works in a similar way to the finite dimension. But if they are parabolic, there is no a priori reason to expect that it works. Okay, I think I was careful enough in wording, so.
No, I mean, let's go back to the very beginning, okay? So what is the status of Morse theory with respect to this construction? Of course, you can, at some point, we follow that road, okay? At the very beginning, what can be more modest and say, this is an integration domain on which I could try to formulate my field theory. That could be another approach. But okay, I'm aware of that. As I was telling you, many things are widely open problem.
But on the other hand, in these systems in which gradient flows are parabolic, we can show that resurgence works. I mean, and
yeah,
resurgence is the analytic side
of okay.
this geometric construction. We think that there is ample evidence which shows that it works. So.
Mm-hmm. Mitata, as I was pointing out from the very beginning, the connection in between the two is one of the things which is not that clear to me. I mean, on a constructive, quote-unquote, approach, I can guess something, but there should be something on which I'm ignorant. I would be very happy to know about.
Yes.
So I want to move the transcendence from good category to bad category, like you deal. Unfortunately, that also has similar puzzles to legal story. So,
really?
Yeah, it has some complex settles which are not clear. They're fluke of resurgence or they're really there. Anyway, it's very similar to legal and for probably good reasons. So there is something to do. But I actually had a question about the last part of your talk. So you consider the gauge orbit of SU3.
Of a critical point.
Of
say A equals zero, and then all the SU3 orbit. Okay.
Right.
I say SU3 because, in principle, one could think of SL3. That is not what I'm trying to say.
SU3 is gauge symmetry.
Yeah. Is the gauge symmetry because of this, once again.
But in physics, we think of gauge group as a redundancy. It's not the symmetry of the problem. So why do you take a...
It is a redundancy, in a sense. If I start here and compute here, it's just like starting here and computing here.
But what I'm trying to say is that suppose you're... I would actually quotient by SU3, and that would actually produce a very singular space most of the time, unless your solution breaks SU3 completely. If it doesn't, for some reason, and typically it doesn't, then you would actually produce very singular points in the phase space.
I couldn't comment. So probably what you are saying is that you stay with only one of these points, and you follow all possible evolution.
Instead of taking one point and replicating it many times, you actually divide by this symmetry. So you, instead of adding and multiplying, you subtract and divide.
Yeah.
I'm saying you're moving in the wrong direction.
But it could be related to the corpus, right? Because existence of this corpus, it is a reflection of the singularities, if you like. Because
you mean Grieber?
Like Grieber corpus. Right?
Orbit is something concrete and.
Orbit is yes, right. But then if you have a corpus, then it means that fixing one particular point in the orbit is not enough, right? Because you have corpus anyway.
I'm not sure which corpus we're talking about. All I'm saying is that if you have solutions, we divide by your symmetry, you not multiply. That's all I'm saying.
No, right. But I think that the existence of corpus is related to what you're saying.
Which corpus?
Before you quotient, if you want.
Because it means that, you see, because you would think that, let's say, I took one representative on the orbit, okay, and it would not be peculiar to any other point. But if you have corpus, it doesn't work this way.
Okay, we should probably talk about it. I'm not sure it's not obvious to me, that's the same, actually.
So you described beautifully how to construct the thing, but starting from a critical point. You also have a recipe on how to find critical points?
No. I mean, that is always, this is in many cases a case by case analysis. I mean, that's one of the, I mean, at the resolution conference, you are going to hear about all these in a different framework in which they want to get rid of Thimble and do other things. I'm not going to comment here. Well, it took me already so much time this way. But okay, there are many things which are difficult. I'm not trading a difficult problem for an easy one, okay? What I'm saying that I'm changing the difficult part to something different.
So if you are to integrate, in a constructive way, just integrate the equation, then as t tends to infinity, you're going to end up on the critical point, and then you can prove that you have that critical point, right?
Yeah. In principle, you could find it by inspection.
So
you start randomly, and you see where end up. There was one theory in which the point was, is it really true that only one contribute? It turned out the answer was yes. In the end, by now, we know it was quite trivial. But in any case, were there any other critical point? The answer was yes, again, part of which we found just that way. I mean, without any other, you pick randomly one point, and you look for a fixed point of that group.
The only danger is whether you collect, you found everyone.
Yeah, exactly. In this sense, it's a case by case. But there are other cases in which you can classify the solution of the equation of motion. In that case, of course, maybe you face a variety, a wide variety, but at least from that point of view, it is known. Many other interesting things. In theory, you have lots of them.
When you consider finite dimensional situation, you can write down the word identity and write down the differential equation with respect to couplings. Is it possible to recognize the residual phase in terms of differential word identity? In the field theory, the analog is you consider Schwinger-Dyson equation. And is it possible to recognize the stuff in that case?
Many of these things could be reformulated in terms of Schwinger-Dyson. There is an approach via Schwinger-Dyson, also to Langevin, by the way, Guralnik, maybe you know that name. But I couldn't elaborate more than that. I would be happy to hear from you, maybe. Okay, it's an interesting question. I know, and there are many things you can go through via Schwinger-Dyson, but I couldn't say more than that, honestly. So I think I've already abused of your time, much longer than expected, so I should stop.
It was lots of useful discussion, and yeah, maybe we will schedule something different for you next week. Thank you very much again.